Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here, to see you all. As Rodney mentioned, this is my roots. And it's really nice to be back here and see some old faces and some new faces. And some new faces that are also old faces in a way. You can take that how you will. I almost asked Al if he wanted to speak in my place, but then I thought the rest of the lessons for the week wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. This lesson is going to serve as an introduction. And so for a few of you, like Al perhaps, it might not be all that beneficial. I hope that it will be. I hope that the principle that we're going to discuss will be enough that you can start to apply it yourselves. But then through the rest of the week, we're going to look at some specific instances where this principle applies. You've all seen the picture up there. It's kind of goofy. And you get the idea. You know the phrase to which this refers. You've heard it. To put the cart before the horse. This is a part of our language. It's an idiom that has been in use since around the year 1510. That's the first time that it shows up in print, and it has survived at least. And it's even been the basis of several mathematics jokes about the mathematician and philosopher René Descartes, about putting Descartes before the horse. Let me show you another example of it. This is sort of a pompous word that you probably don't use in your everyday conversation all that often, but you know what it means. I'm sure you've read it, you've heard it, you've probably used it. Preposterous. You probably don't know the etymology of it. And while etymologies don't tell you what the actual meaning of a word is, they don't tell you how it's used, but they can tell you some interesting things about how that word came to be used in that way. This is a word that's built from two Latin prepositions. Pre, which we use all the time, which means before, and post, which we use all the time, and it means after. So the idea is something that is preposterous is taking what was before and putting it after, or taking what was after and putting it before. Mixing things up, doing it backward, inverting it. This is part of our language. It's almost part of our culture, this idea. But why does it matter to us? It would be silly for us to spend time thinking about this sort of thing. Unless it affects our walk with God. And it does. We do have a problem with thinking about handling spiritual matters inside out. I'm going to tell you a few of my own little parables to help you understand the problem a little bit more clearly before we get into our specific applications. When you're sick, what do you do to try to fix it? For instance, if you have a fever, well, you know you can do something like take Tylenol. That might help reduce the fever. It's supposed to, frequently does. If you have a cough, there are dozens of different cough syrups and cough drops and cough sprays and humidifiers that will assist you with that. That will suppress the cough, make you feel better, and a lot of them are very helpful. If you're feeling very fatigued, what do you do about that? If you're out at work one day and you get there in the morning and you feel like, oh, I could already go for a nap. Well, that's why they have things like 5-hour energy, right? You guzzle down one of those and you're set. No lack of energy after that. But were any of those three things, the fever, the cough, fatigue, were they the actual problem? Was that what was wrong with your body? No. They were uncomfortable, they were inconvenient, but they were just symptoms of something deeper. If you have a fever, that could be from any number of things. It could be that you have a broken limb. That frequently causes a fever. Could be that you have food poisoning or a viral infection, many other things. Taking a Tylenol is not going to fix your broken arm. It might make the fever go away, but it's not going to address the cause. If you have a cough, well, it could be that you have emphysema. It could be you have tuberculosis. It could be that you just inhaled an insect, for all I know. But drinking some DayQuil is probably not going to help with your emphysema, is it? It's not going to address the root cause. And the same goes for fatigue. It could be caused by any number of things. It could be that you have a cold. It could be that you're pregnant. It could be that you haven't slept in 3 days. And taking a 5-hour energy is not actually going to help with any of those problems. Might make you feel like you're not so tired for a while, but you're still going to need to sleep. None of these things was the actual problem in and of itself. Even though in our own lives, when they happen to us, we try to alleviate the symptoms. That's usually what we end up treating, the symptoms. And then we let the body try to take care of the actual problem on its own. We don't address the core issue. In fact, the fever, the cough, fatigue, they're your body's way of correcting the problem without telling you exactly what it is. We do the same thing when we try to fix machinery, for instance, if we don't know what we're doing. Now, these are going to seem really obvious to you, but people have done more ridiculous things. Let's say you're working in your kitchen, you're putting together a meal, and you're using a kitchen appliance, let's say a food processor, and you start to smell smoke coming from it. Okay, that's a problem. How are you going to fix it? Plug your nose, keep on chopping. Problem solved. I'm not going to smell smoke anymore. It's taken care of. That would appeal to most of the women here. Now, one that would appeal more to the men. If you're driving your car and you start to hear your brakes squealing when you use them, how are you going to fix that problem? A great solution is to just stop using your brakes. You'll never hear them squeal again. You might not hear anything after a little while. They sound absurd. Sounds like, well, it's obvious that we're going about handling these problems inside out or backward or in a preposterous way. We're putting the cart before the horse, however you want to say it. But we do fall into this trap. We do it in our own lives. We do it when we see spiritual problems. And this isn't just my harebrained idea. Jesus exposed the same problem among the most conservative and strict Jews around during his ministry. Turn to Matthew chapter 23. We're only going to read a short section from this tirade against the scribes and the Pharisees. But to introduce that, to get us all on the same page, the way that Jesus is thinking, take a look at this. Most, if not all of you, recognize the structure. You know probably the name, the Taj Mahal. Isn't it beautiful? Now, if you know enough about it, you might know that, well, it's actually a Muslim structure. So could we really call that beautiful? It's a terrible thing. Yeah, I'm not trying to approve of anything in Islam, but we can still appreciate the beauty of the structure, right? Look at it. That's just one side. The other three look exactly the same. It's perfectly symmetrical. It's pure white. There's so many things about it that we could examine in great detail. And this is just part of a much larger complex. The whole thing spectacular. It's beautiful. It has elements of Persian and Turkish and Indian styles melded together. It took about 22 years to complete the structure. They employed something like 20,000 workers to construct it. Look at the minarets on the corners. The way they form those, the vertices of the structure, the way they encapsulate the rest of it, sort of a sentinel on each corner, beautiful arches throughout it, the domes. I already mentioned the symmetry. If you look at those arches, you'll notice there's this big one in the center and then smaller ones off to the side that look exactly the same. There's another one up on above that. They're all exactly the same. It's meticulously precise. Wonderful craftsmanship. Wonderful architecture. Do you know why it was built? Do you know what's inside? This is a tomb. Inside are dead men's bones. Matthew 23, verse 27. Jesus says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. So you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." Things haven't changed all that much, have they? We still do this to our graves. And you might say, well, no one's making a grave like that anymore. No. But if you, for instance, take a walk through the Evergreen Memorial Cemetery that's just behind my sister and brother-in-law's house, you'll see some nice-looking graves. They're beautiful. They're not on this scale, but they're still beautified. We still try to take death and make it look pretty. How could they change this, the scribes and the Pharisees? What are they going to do about it? If they don't want to be whitewashed tombs, if they would rather not be full of all uncleanness inside, what do they need to do? Well, surprise, surprise, Jesus told them. If you back up a couple of verses, to 25. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the plate, that the outside also may be clean." Now that last verse, verse 26, it doesn't actually make all that much sense when you just think about it in terms of a cup or a plate. Now, if you've done any washing of dishes, then you know, if you take something that is covered in filth and you clean the inside of it and you don't touch the outside is not going to get clean just from you cleaning the inside. It's not the way it works. But that's not really Jesus' point here. His point is that the Pharisees are doing the opposite approach. They're taking a filthy cup, scrubbing the outside, leaving the inside disgusting, and saying, "There you go, it's clean." Jesus says, "No, no, no. That's not going to help. It's still full of filth. If you want it to be clean, if you want it to be something that's not going to harm you, that's the point of washing things." For them, it was even more about the idea of holiness and cleanness that is all throughout the law. Makes a lot more sense to take care of the inside. And it's the same with the people. If you clean up the outside, if you look great, but inside you're full of filth, what good is that? Are you really clean? Are you really holy? Are you really pure? They certainly weren't. But if you clean up the inside instead, then you might be able to obtain some cleanness, some righteousness, a good relationship with God on the outside as well. The Pharisees were trying to accomplish these things by a method that was inside out or preposterous. They were concerned with outward appearances, not with inner obedience. In reality, they needed to handle those things on the inside. That would have taken care of the outside. And that's why Jesus says in verse 26, if you clean the inside of the cup and the plate, then the outside also may be clean. Turn to Mark chapter 7. Now, it might not be too surprising that Jesus is talking to pretty much the same group of people. It's not the same individuals, I imagine. But he's talking to Pharisees, and they have a gripe with them. We'll start in verse 1 of Mark chapter 7. Now, when the Pharisees gathered to him with some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem, they saw that some of his disciples ate with hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands properly, holding to the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other traditions that they observe, such as the washing of cups and pots and copper vessels and dining couches. And the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?" And he said to them, "Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me.'" Jump down to verse 14, and we'll continue. "And he called the people to him again and said to them, 'Hear me, all of you, and understand, there is nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him, but the things that come out of a person are what defile him.' And when he had entered the house and left the people, his disciples asked him about the parable. And he said to them, 'Then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not into his heart but his stomach, and is expelled?' Thus he declared all foods clean. And he said, 'What comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of men, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person.'" You see, when his disciples question this, when he says that nothing that goes into a person can defile him, but what comes out of a person defiles him, and later they have to ask him, they wait until it's just them, and they say, "How can this be? God gave us a lot of rules about what things are clean and what are unclean for this purpose, right? He told us that certain things are unclean and we shouldn't eat them, like, for instance, blood, animals that have been killed by dogs. We're not allowed to eat unclean things like camels, badgers, rabbits, pigs, shellfish, eagles, vultures, falcons, ravens, ostriches, hawks, seagulls, owls, storks, herons, most insects, rats, mice, lizards, and snakes. Most of those you can find in Leviticus chapter 11. But Jesus seemingly goes against this and says, no, cleanness and holiness, righteousness must first come from the inside. And that will take care of the outside? Turn to Matthew chapter 7. You might be noticing that this is something that pops up a number of times in Jesus' teaching. In Matthew 7, we'll start reading in verse 15. Jesus says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves." Well, we've seen it already. Pretending to be one thing on the outside, but inside they're really something completely different. Verse 16, "You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits. Again, what's on the inside will determine what happens on the outside. So being a healthy tree, taking care of the inside, cleaning the inside, if you will, is what will produce good fruit on the outside. So now we've looked at this principle from our perspective, even as inward as our own bodies and our ailments. We've seen it in Jesus' teachings as well. And if you're a student of the Old Testament, then you have seen the same principle applied to Israel long before Jesus ever indicted the Pharisees for these things. In Amos chapter 5, the Lord says, "I hate, I despise your feasts, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them, and the peace offerings of your fattened animals, I will not look upon them. Take away from me the noise of your songs. To the melody of your harps I will not listen. But let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream." Isn't this the same problem? If Israel had no problem with keeping the feasts, with assembling before the Lord, with giving him the grain offerings and burnt offerings and peace offerings, singing songs to him, all those outward things that make them look like great worshipers of God. But on the inside, what are they? Unjust, unrighteous. They're like cups that have been cleaned up on the outside, but the inside is still filthy. Or you could say they're like trees that are unhealthy, that might look pretty good, but then when you examine the fruit, it's not good. When the fruit is injustice and oppression, things that God told them for centuries not to do, they were going about trying to please God in this same inside-out manner. I'll give you a couple other examples. We won't go and read these passages, but in 1 Samuel 13, Saul tries to gain favor with God by presuming to act as a priest, which he had no right to do. And it seems like if you read between the lines, it seems like he's really more worried about keeping his army from disintegrating any farther. So his supposed show of righteousness in offering this sacrifice is actually motivated by a lack of faith in God. And so if we didn't know the end of the story, then we might have looked at Saul and said, wow, he took some great initiative there. There wasn't somebody there to give the offering as was supposed to happen, and so Saul said, well, here am I, I'll do it. But it was inside out. He wasn't clean on the inside. He was filthy. And you know what happened as a result of that. He lost his kingdom. In 2 Samuel chapter 11, the man to whom Saul lost his kingdom falls prey to the same type of mistake. When he got worried about covering up his sin with Bathsheba instead of repenting of it, what does that sound like? Was he trying to clean the inside of the cup? Or was he trying to clean the outside? He left the inside filthy. And so by trying to appear clean, much like the Pharisees were doing in Jesus' day, he was willing to incur whatever filthy cost was necessary. And so he lied. He deceived. He murdered. This is a principle that we see, that Jesus saw, that manifests itself in different ways, in different times. We've seen it in Israel, both in the Old Testament and in the New. Do we see it in ourselves? This problem does appear in many areas of our walk with God, and we're not going to come anywhere near exhausting them this week. But what I would like you to do is to think about the following premises from your own perspective and be as honest with yourself as you can. And ask yourself, A, is this true? And B, if it's not true, is it at least something to which I aspire? The premises are, I always make sure what I do is authorized by God. I have faith, but I make sure to do good works, since faith without works is dead. I love to tell others about the benefits of being a Christian. I hold myself and others up to concrete standards for living as Christians. When I see sinners, I tell them to clean up their lives so that God will save them. We're going to explore one of these in each of the succeeding lessons, one per night. And I've arranged to have them left up on the screen periodically so that you will not have to memorize them all now or write them down. Think about them. Don't just give it a glance and say, oh yeah. Really think about it. Try to examine yourself. Examine yourself and examine the words. We're going to need to be meticulous if we're really going to clean the inside of the cup. If you're still open to Matthew chapter 7, let's read verses 16 through 20 again. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits. When we concern ourselves only with producing good fruit and we forget about actually being a good tree, we mess everything up. We end up handling the situation inside out. When we try to clean the outside of the cup but forget to even look inside, we mess everything up. And we end up handling the situation inside out. Which one are you concerned with? Did you catch the reason that we should be so concerned with this in Matthew 7? What happens to the trees that don't produce good fruit? It's not just, oh, They're not good trees after all. They're diseased. That would be bad enough, wouldn't it? What happens to the diseased tree? They get cut down and thrown into the fire. I've seen that a lot in nature. Working as an arborist, I've removed a lot of unhealthy trees. Most of the time we haven't burned them, but we've sent them through the chipper, and frankly, I would rather die by fire than the chipper. Do you want to be a good tree? You want to be a clean cup? Work on the inside first. Let's return one more time to Matthew chapter 23. Remember what Jesus said to these people about the way that they were approaching righteousness, as if it were from the outside in, or maybe not even from the outside in, as if they were only concerned with the outside. Now read verse 13. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You neither enter yourselves nor allow those who would enter to go in. Now that's scary. I said it would be bad enough to just be a diseased tree. But on top of that, we're going to be cut down and thrown into the fire or the chipper. But we're not only responsible for ourselves. If we start acting like the Pharisees, if we start worrying only about the outside and we end up like whitewashed tombs like the Taj Mahal, we're going to keep others from entering God's kingdom. We must not do this. These problems, this mindset, were so severe, they were preventing the Pharisees and others from following Christ, from entering the kingdom, from being saved. Do not let this mindset be in you.